Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to Speaking of Reliability. I'm Fred Shankelberg, your host, and I'm joined again today by Kirk Gray, and we're going to talk, as we've been talking about, HALT testing and so on, but hey, Kirk, how's it going with you today?
Oh, it's been great. School started, and summer's about ended. We're looking forward to the fall colors here in Colorado.
We don't get those in California. We just have fires.
Yes, and we're getting your smoke.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But yeah, Fred, it's been great talking to you about this series, speaking of reliability. And one of the common questions I've always heard in my experience in teaching this is, what do we need to do before a HALT session? Well, of course, we've talked in the past about one of our previous podcasts that one of the most critical things is to have all of your management and as much of the engineering groups and even procurement understanding what HALT is and what a change it will be. So once that's established and you've gotten the go-ahead to rent the time in a HALT chamber and you've found a facility or a test lab that has the capabilities to do a HALT or extreme stress testing, there's some key other items that you need to cover before you go to the lab and make the expense of applying the HALT test.
Well, Kirk, I would, you know, before we look for a lab, I'm thinking as well, what do we need to look for in a lab? Do we always need a chamber? I think we talked about that before. It's more, so isn't there a step of, well, what stresses do we want to apply?
Well, that would be true. You'd first, and part of the education process would be sitting down with your design engineering and discussing with them what their suspected weak links or the weakest parts might be, or the areas of concern that have shown up in predecessor products.
So like temperature or heat or from field data or from customer complaints or engineering judgment, all those sources.
All those sources would be included. Okay. And it would be very important to discuss how to what sequence you might be testing as far as the product subsystems, whether you'd have of course, most products do not suddenly appear as a single product. They have different parts and different stages that they're being built and designed, and before they all come together as a singular product. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there may be different critical components. A typical one is a power supply.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I always start with that.
You always start with that. That's an Achilles heel in any electronic product. If the power supply doesn't work,
that's right.
Usually you have a dead product. So also those are usually low cost commodities for consumer products. So they're very low margin products. And since they're so critical in the function of the product, that would be something that I would probably test individually before beginning the whole, and it's probably available because you might be buying it. Many times they buy it off the shelf, so it's probably already designed and ready to go, and that will give you some previous testing to understand how those assemblies work when you may before you incorporate them into the larger system.
Right. So I think we touched on two topics already, but let's narrow it down that we've got the go-ahead, and let's say we've got a semi-custom power supply that our design team is in the process of modifying. But we have some samples, and we've got the management buy-in, and people kind of understand what HALT is, but let's say we've been tasked with, well, let's go run the test. So you mentioned the first step is really, well, what are the stresses? So if we use the power supply as an example, it could be the line voltage, you know, if it's 120 volts or 220 mm-hmm. volts or variations of that, or it could be temperature, or it could be vibration, or it could be, but it's basically a brainstorm process. Is that right?
That's very true, Fred. Basically, it is looking at all the potential failure mechanisms. And of course, you're referencing what you've seen in the past. As far as if it's a solder joint, certainly thermal cycling and vibration are going to precipitate any kind of cracking or problems with the solder inner metallics. And so, yes, it's a matter of focusing on what you've seen and what the potential failure mechanisms are as to how you'd be applying the stress. And almost every product, of course, gets some kind of thermal transitions and vibration. So those are probably the most common. But the sequence of testing, also how you're going to apply those stresses, is a critical part of getting the most value out of the very valuable samples you probably have, because they're prototypes or early production. Everybody's trying to acquire them. So you need to be very careful in the sequence of step stressing that you want to do, and not quickly reach a catastrophic failure point. And the idea is to get as much information out of the product before you actually reach a possible destruct limit.
Right. So we talk to a handful of folks. We may talk to the vendor. We have field history and stuff. We might end up with 10, 20, or 30 different stresses if, you know, we get deep enough into it. But mm-hmm. So there's a step then where you narrow that down and come up with 3, 4, maybe 5 stresses. So at that point, that means when it would make sense. Do we do this in our own lab? Do we have the resources, or do we need to get a specialized chamber, or do we need to go to a lab facility someplace, whatever? But you mentioned renting time. I've seen that done so many times. Of instead of buying a $50,000 or $100,000 chamber, and through a capital acquisition process, which could take a year or more, is just go to a local, to a lab, a halt lab, for lack of a better term.
Right.
So there's some work there to get, you know, do they have the capability, get a purchase order in place, all that stuff.
And that's probably another podcast episode of talking about internal halt, doing it inside and acquiring a chamber, or using an outside external lab. There's a lot of trade-offs in that. Mm-hmm. But once you find a facility that can apply the stresses you want to apply, or you feel are going to be the most critical to revealing the weaknesses in a product, then you decide how you're going to monitor those. Temperature, you're going to use thermocouples and some data logger. And vibration, you'll have to have, of course, your accelerometers and some kind of a processing software to look at power spectral densities, or the actual vibration response of the product. And this is very critical, that we're really in halt. We want to make sure that we're consistently monitoring the same location when we do a sample-to-sample or repeated halt applications. We want to make sure that we're at the same, we're monitoring the response of the product from the same point in the product, and not to.
You're talking about thermocouples and accelerometers, and thinking through and being consistent about where we place those in a device.
Sure. Right. Right. That's part of it.
Right. So let's say we're doing a power supply, and we're going to look at temperature, hot and cold, and vibration, because
right.
mm-hmm. it'd be a basic, and we might add power, so 3 stresses.
Right, power margining or voltage margining.
Right, and so we talked to a lab that has a vibration and temperature chamber, which is the classic halt chamber, and mm-hmm. they have a nice power supply. They have the accelerometers, the thermocouples, and they're going to ask, well, where do you want to locate these? And they may provide some guidance, but we need to think through that. And
right.
then, so we get we have stresses, we have a lab. How do you know you see a failure? I mean, we got to think through how we're going to test this thing, right?
Exactly. You're going to have to monitor its function. That's, in fact, an absolute, really an absolute to halt testing, is that the product is powered on and your function, you're monitoring and actively watching its operation. And that, you know, depending on the sub-assembly, you may not be able to operate everything in it, but you have to be able to operate some things in it. And you might pick a few key functions because, you know, you want to not take all day. You can't test every possible function in some devices, like a microprocessor, for instance.
Right.
It would take you a year to do that. So you've really got to limit to the kind of a comprehensive test, what is the most straightforward. And my advice is also run it as it's going to be run in the field, that you don't run a, say, test sequence against it that just checks one thing,
right,
that the product is interacting with it. It's internally doing all of its functions, not like you're trying to discover, as I've seen before, the actual whether that function just works. And it's a different way of sequentially testing each function as opposed to running it as it would be in an operating end use condition, if you can do that.
Mm-hmm. So like for a power supply, we'd probably put a load that would simulate the load signature of whatever product we're dealing with. So it may have a startup cycle, and then various fluctuations as the thing operates, and then a shutdown sequence. And that might take a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a 24/7 type operation, it's a steady load with small peaks, or it may have surge loads, or whatever it is.
Right.
Is now that can get complicated, you know, adding simulated loads to a product.
Yes. So that's where you get your inputs from the design engineers and people who know that, you know, the power supply engineer would certainly be involved and critical to this halt test, is to know how to load that and how maybe dynamically loading it would affect it. And so, and if this is your first halt, you really want to keep it as simple as possible in the beginning, not to put a bunch of multiple stresses at the same time. Don't do that, because you're trying to, at the same time you want to find product problems or weaknesses in the product, you also are selling. If this is your first halt, you are trying to show the benefit of halt. And if you just hit it with a bunch of vibration and thermal cycling or stress in a combined environment, you may not know, and it may be very difficult, much more difficult to determine what stress caused the weakness to fail or brought the weakness out. So those are all critical concerns and things to discuss before you get to the lab. Then you have to see, of course, what the lab has, and make sure that you have the right monitoring instruments, the right, you might take some replacement parts. You may have an early catastrophic failure because of a poor manufacturing process. And surprisingly, you don't want to find manufacturing issues in halt.
No, not you when really. You're, yeah. And if, you know, if you paid for the chamber for the whole day, you don't want to end it after 20 minutes. And so bring a spare.
Right.
So how many samples? I've seen people say you need 2 samples. You can get away with 1. Others are adamant you have to have 4 for some reason.
Well, yeah. And that's certainly a number that's hard to pin down. It's kind of like statistics. More is better. And of course, you're working with a product that, or at a stage of the product that's probably very difficult and limited number of samples. So,
yeah, it's usually as many as you can get.
As many as you can get, right. You beg for 5 and hope you get 2. So, you know, that's kind of the way it is. But you can also look at people's, if other parts of the company or design engineering has used system and hasn't damaged or significantly changed it, you could use that too. But a lot of times halt itself, when you get into the halt and doing it, will give you a clue as to what you maybe need to look for the second or third, or even may be justification for getting additional samples. For instance, you have a very wide distribution in your upper operating limit, temperature operating limit. You have maybe a 30 degree range when you have three or four products, or three or four samples. You have a 30 degree difference in between the worst limit or the lowest limit and the highest limit, and you want to start to kind of isolate and get a feel for what component you might, especially if you're not destroying them. Mm-hmm. And in digital hardware, you can rarely destroy digital hardware by temperature only before, because you're usually going to shut down due to signal integrity issues long before you destroy a component. Right. And so certain stresses you can repeat and not worry about, or finding limits like an operating limit in a PC. You can do that many times and repeat that without real risk of causing significant or catastrophic damage.
Yeah, he's going back to the power supplies. Sometimes they have like a current limiter that if they see, if there is a 25 amp power supply and they see 50 amps coming in, they'll limit that. The circuitry itself will just shut it down. Or right. Temperature sensors on ICs. If you're running a analog ASIC too hot, it'll limit itself. It'll throttle back or shut down.
And that's a very good point, Fred. That's a very good point, is that you need to look at devices that have intrinsic shutdowns in them, like mm-hmm. a thermal trip. A CPU is a classic example. No manufacturer of a CPU will give you the keys to unlock that.
Yeah, because they know it's going to limit the life of the product if you run it right, at those right. limits but, or above.
Right. And so, and they're putting it in there for the general consumer and the end use environment and for the future. But in testing, it would be great to disable that. But in lieu of that,
you need to know where those limits are. You need to know what. Well, right. Also, like hard drives. I've seen people suspend hard drives off of the vibration table because they know that a relatively low amount of vibration will destroy the hard drive. But we already right. know that. So right. there's no point proving that, but we want exactly. the hard drive as part of the system.
Right.
So we isolate it from that right that stress. So let's wrap up.
Okay.
I think there's like four things we've talked about. Let me see if I got it right. Well, one is once you've got approval and you're ready to go and you got samples, then is, well, what are the stresses that are salient? So there's some brainstorming and some discussions that goes into that.
Right.
And then it's, well, how are you going to apply those stresses? So internal labs or test chambers, or do you go outside? Like you said, that's probably a topic for another podcast, is to contracting with a lab or doing it yourself.
What?
And so how are you going to do it? So there's some planning there. And then there's how are you going to control and monitor the stresses? So where do you place thermocouples, for example? And then how do you monitor the product itself? So if, like we use the idea of a power supply, how do you know it's working? So get it powered up and
look at all the voltages. And
look at voltages.
Continuously. Right?
Yeah. But you have to bring the equipment and know where right. to attach it and all those things. So there's quite a bit of work before you step foot in the lab to do this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's what then sets us up to that. We get to the lab and we have all the equipment. And I think one last topic is, and you mentioned it just briefly, Kirk, is take the engineer, the power supply engineer with you to
oh,
the
yeah.
lab.
Right.
Right. So it's scheduling also. So we'll probably come back to that topic again, because it's all, so much fun having the design engineer sitting next to you.
It can be.
Can be scary.
It can also
too.
Be, very hard on him.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's wrap it up for today. And this session, we'll be back, Kirk. We'll talk about more about, you know, I think the next one we should talk about is what do we do once we get started, when we're in the lab. But in the meantime, hopefully everybody's having fun out there breaking stuff, and we'll go with that. So thank you for listening to Speaking of Reliability. If you enjoy our shows and these discussions, let us know. Leave a review on iTunes or send us an email or a comment. And also let us know what questions you have. We'd love to hear from you as to how we can help you master reliability engineering. So that's speaking of reliability. Till next time, have fun. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.